Somebody who hasn't been here the whole day. How many have chanted at least 32 rounds? That's everybody. Almost everybody. You've chanted more than 32 rounds. At least 32 rounds. Yeah. Huh?
64.
Yeah, so you've chanted at least 32. How many have chanted 64?
Forty-nine.
Yes, Prabhuji. And how many rounds are you going to chant before the end of the day?
64 for tomorrow.
How late are you going to stay up to chant 64?
I don't know.
You don't know? I hope you stay awake. Pretty hard to chant your sleep. That's a lot of rounds. Well, did you chant it some before you got here?
Mm-hmm.
How many did you chant before you got here?
16.
And how many you chanted so far today?
I have 4 left.
You have 4 left.
58.
Wow. Have you chanted 64 rounds before?
Mm-hmm.
And she's coming to class on top of it. Fantastic. Okay. Would anybody consider themselves to be really new, so new that you don't know the meaning of this word upadhi? Anybody unfamiliar with the term upadhi? Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay.
I don't think I'm new, but I still don't know that word.
Huh?
But I don't think I'm new, but I still don't know that word.
Okay. Well, it means designation. Like, over here are the men, and over here are the women. That's the designation. Some are from America, some are from India. That's a designation. Some are young, some are old. That's a designation. So, something other than who we really are, and an imposition upon something that limits it, confines it, and in some senses defines when it's not actually what the real entity is, the real thing, the real person is. I'll do a little sharing. This is a bonus message right now. Because I've been studying for the next time I visit in Seattle is I'll be discussing Tattva Sandarbha. And that's it's a rigorous text. In one sense, it's simple, but the messages within the Sandarbhas is really refined. And you know that there's 3 stages of God realization: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Yes? You familiar with that? This young boy. What's your name?
Sean.
Sean. Yeah. Are you familiar with Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan? Those 3 stages of realization?
No.
No? Okay, I'll help you so that you don't lose you completely. We're sitting inside the room, and outside the room, we can see the light of the sun coming into the room. That's the sunshine. But we can't see the sun disk, at least I can't from where I'm sitting. So in addition to the sunshine, there's the sun disk or the sun globe from which the shine is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Vedas teach us that there's a sun god. His name is Vivaswan. So, those are three different features of the sun. The sun shine, the sun disk, or the sun globe, and then the sun god. Same thing. Sun, sun, and sun. But the sun shine, sun globe, and sun god. And everything is resting upon the sun god. The place where the sun god resides, the sun planet, is his dhamma, or his abode. And then the shine that comes from the sun doesn't exist separate from the sun. The sun doesn't exist separate from the shine of the sun. So it's one entity, but in three different aspects of that same entity. Sun shine, sun disk, and sun god. Right? Similarly, Krishna is the personal feature, and the super soul is the localized feature, and Brahman, or the all-pervasive presence of spirit, is another feature of the Supreme. Just as sun god, sun disk, sun shine, Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman. Brahman is the all-pervasive existence of the Supreme, like the sunshine is all throughout the solar system. Everywhere. Everywhere. There's some shadows, but otherwise everywhere. Everywhere. And then there's the sun, so one place. So the super soul is situated within the heart of every living being. So, how many people in the room? Let's say there's 25, something. So, how many super souls are there in the room? One super soul situated variously within the hearts of every living being. There may be some little insects crawling around in the room, so there's super soul inside each one. One super soul. Localized feature, like the sun disk or sun globe. But that localized feature, Paramatma, is an expansion of Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, the personal feature. Personal feature, localized feature, all-pervasive feature. Now you know something that you didn't know before. 2:30 or 4:30. There's three aspects of the Absolute Truth. So, we're used to hearing this term upadhi. All of this is just to explain the word upadhi. I'm sure the verse is quoted. It's one of the definitions of devotional service from Narada Pancharatra. Sarva upadhi vinirmuktam tat paratvain vinirmuktam. Let's say it together, those of you that know the verse. Sarvapadi vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchate. Here comes one super soul. Inside the heart of the jiva soul, inside of little child's body. So the little child's body is the upadhi, and the real identity is the spirit soul. And so Jiva Goswami uses the word upadhi in a different sense, in a dictionary sense or classic Vedic sense, where he explains that the topmost feature, Bhagavan, that's Krishna, Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. But we know this from Srimad Bhagavatam, he's explaining this. The Bhagavan feature. Okay. The Bhagavan feature is Krishna in Goloka. And then there's the Narayana feature of the Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha. And then there's the Purusha avatar features Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Shiradakshaya Vishnu, Sukhasom, Shiradakshaya Vishnu. And because Shiradakshaya Vishnu and the other Vishnus, the other Purusha forms, Purusha avatar forms of the Lord, they deal with the material energy. They're forms of the Lord that have a function or a service or what they do is they arrange for creation, maintenance, and annihilation. And then resting, and then again creation and maintenance and annihilation, and again resting. Because they deal with the material nature, Jiva Goswami says, therefore, that is for them, not like us. It's an upadhi. It's something that defines them and in some cases limits them. Limits in the sense that, well, they don't have pastimes like Krishna has. They don't play upon the flute and go herding cows with the cowherd boys and lift hills of Govardhan. Vishnu doesn't do those things. They do the in creation, in matters of creation with the material world. So because of that matter of creation, you know from nectar devotion, there's four features that Krishna has that even Narayana in Vaikuntha doesn't have, right? So if he doesn't have, or the Purusha avatars don't have, specifically the Purusha avatars don't have because of these upadhis. You with me? But now we'll go back to the normal way that we use upadhis. So, chanting without upadhis. You have to use your mouth and your lungs and the tongue and the teeth. And, you know, so we use those things, but that's not the essence of what chanting is. Bhaktisiddhanta says, very nice statement. I'll say it twice because it's so nice. First time. Chanting is not simply making a sound. You can make a machine that can make the sound. Or you can train a parrot to make the sound. Chanting is not just a matter of the tongue and the teeth and the lungs making the sound. So what is chanting? Chanting without those designations. Chanting is when the spirit soul calls out, "Oh Lord Nityananda, you are the deliverer of the pure holy name. This unfortunate living entity, me, am lost in the ocean of material existence. Please be merciful and deliver unto me the pure holy name." And when Lord Nityananda hears that sincere appeal, and he extends the pure holy name, and the pure holy name touches the heart, then with the same tongue, the same teeth, the same lungs, the sound comes. That is chanting. That's what our topic is. Chanting without upadhis or designations. Statement from Srila Prabhupada. If you want to come into the fire, you have to become fire. You've heard that one before. To enter into fire, you have to become fire. Here's a longer explanation. A devotee cannot be bad character because Krishna is Parabrahman, Paradhamma, Pavitram. Pavitra means pure. So impure cannot approach him. That is not possible. If you want to enter fire, you must be fire. And if you are not fire, then you will burn. You become fire. So, first of all, we have to revive. Because Krishna, the example is given, that Krishna is the big fire. And we are sparks of fire. We are also fire, very small. the sparks of fire can play, remain within fire, and it is beautiful. I don't know how to make that sound.
Fut, fut.
Fut, fut. Okay. There is fire. You've seen. While fire is going, it is very beautiful, and as soon as this fut, fut falls down, separate from the, it is extinguished. No more fire. It is black charcoal, that's all. So, if we want happiness, then we have to dance with Krishna. But you cannot dance Krishna if I am not pure. Krishna is pavitram, paramam, bhavan. Pavitra means the supreme pure. If you want to take pleasure in the company of Krishna and dance, rasa dance, then you will have to become pure, purified. That is sarvapadi vinirmuktam. To be free from all designation. Narayana Parayana. Narayana society or Krishna society, same thing. So what's he saying? This sarvapadi vinirmuktam is what the condition where we identify ourselves as pure spirit soul and we conduct our lives accordingly. We accept some role or position within society according to the covering, but we don't identify with the covering. This is another Rupa Goswami verse. Let's say it together. Atapri Krishna Namadi Abhadraya Mindriyai Sevaruhi Kriti Vada Svayameva Svaratyada. What does it mean? I'll read the translation, but first to summarize its meaning. In order to understand Krishna, very difficult. But it's possible. And it's possible for one who has controlled the senses that begin with the tongue down at the bottom. Therefore, material senses cannot appreciate Krishna's holy name, form, qualities, and pastimes. When a conditioned soul is awakened to Krishna consciousness and renders service by using his tongue to chant the Lord's holy name and taste the remnants of the Lord's food, the tongue is purified. And one gradually comes to understand who Krishna really is. So that's the method. And here's an application. One application of the method. This is a particular prayer where one is requesting this purified state of consciousness. I am by nature the eternal servant of Krishna, but by misfortune, due to being inimical toward him from time immemorial, I have been identifying myself with the body. That's the body. And been continuously wandering the cycle of birth and death in the material world, suffering the burning threefold miseries. Now as a result of some unimaginable good fortune, by the mercy of my spiritual master, I know that I am the eternal servant of Krishna, and that I am an infinitesimal spiritual being, completely apart from the gross and subtle body. That's purified consciousness, beyond designations. Now, by the order of my spiritual master, following his footsteps, I have obtained the good fortune of being able to serve the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is a redundant. And Sri Sri Radha Damodara Radha Shalasundara, the deities that you worship in your home or at your temple. That's it. It's a acknowledgement of self-identity, the misfortune of being covered, the good fortune of having Krishna consciousness become awakened, and submission. There's a similar submission indicated here. Bhagavad Gita. Let's chant together. Brahmaputta Vasanaha Asochati Nahamchati Samasareshu Bhuteshu Manavati Lapate Param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. It's a nice verse. Very important verse. So, again, that attaining pure devotional service, this is the Nara Pancharatra verse. Sarva Upadi The Nirmuktam, becoming liberated from or freed from all upadis or designations or anything other than who we really are, ultimately. If you remember from the discussion yesterday, Jivanti, just live in Krishna consciousness. Jnane kriyasa buddha pasyanamanta eva jivanti sanvaparitam bhavadiya vatam. That verse by Lord Brahma, that Ramananda Roy said, this is the goal of life and the means to achieve it. That pure Krishna consciousness, that's the devotional service, relinquish the identifications of coverings. Sarvapani Nirmuktam. Tat Paraklena Nirmalam. Bhakti, or devotional service, means engaging all our senses in the service of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of all the senses. When the spirit soul renders service unto the Supreme, there are two side effects. One is free from all material designations, and simply by being employed in the service of the Lord, one's senses are purified. Interesting translation. Normally it's the other way around. The prerequisite is relinquish your sense of designations. Serve from the heart, serve from the platform of soul. Translation is turned around. Devotional service is so powerful it has two byproducts. Designations are dissolved. And senses become purified. Here's the word for word. There's this word upadi. Sarva upadi. Prabhupada has translated it. Free from all kinds of material designations, or free from all desires except the desire to render service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's this little word, upadi. And then tat pratvena, similar. Sole purpose of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tat pratvena. And nirmalam, purified. Uncontaminated by the effects of speculative knowledge and fruitive activities. Sound familiar? That's Rupa Goswami's definition. Anyati lashata shunyam jnana karma janatam. He's put that just in this word, nirmala. Then Rishikena, Rishika Isha, by those senses now being purified from designations, really nice. There's everyone is rendering some service. This is the constitution of the soul, to render service. Without exception, everyone is serving. You can't promise, it's pretty clear. You can't think of someone that's not serving someone. Everyone is serving someone. Everyone is serving someone. So there's service with unpurified and service with purified senses. So this Rishikena Rishikesha is the senses become purified by the process of bhakti itself. Where the interest is to satisfy the senses of Rishikesh. That bhakti process purifies the senses because he's the supreme pure. And the sense of designations becomes dissolved. Although we may go on serving. Like Lord Chaitanya, he went on serving. That's Lord Chaitanya. He served as if he was doing his regular duties as a matter of routine. So one whose consciousness is totally absorbed in transcendental love of God, they'll still conduct their external affairs, but their absorption is not in identifying with the external affairs. Their absorption is Krishna. Prabhupada writes about this in his Nectar Devotion introduction. So, when our senses are engaged for the actual proprietor of the senses, that is called devotional service. And our conditional state, our senses are engaged in serving these bhavigrahans. When the same senses are engaged in executing the order of Krishna, our activities are called bhakti. He's just explaining this Sarvapadi verse. So now, what we're doing is, this is a little background to get at how to chant without upadis. Here's the layout, which is so clear. It's comparing this translation, this verse. There's two standard definitions of bhakti. One is this Narada Pancharatra verse, the other is Rupa Goswami's verse, Anyabhi Lashita Shunyam. Yeah. So, this is making a comparison. Anyabhi Lash Ita Shunyam. Shunyam. Sarva Upadi. Any other desires. You saw from the translation, the word-for-word translation, sarva upadi, upadi meaning designations, or a desire for anything other than the service of Krishna, or something other than the service of Krishna. So sarva upadi nirmukham. And tat paratvena. Go back. Tat paratvena. By the sole purpose of serving the personality of Godhead, meaning without jnana karma as the purpose. Tat paratvena. Jnana karma anavritam. Anavritam means not covered. Avritam and anavritam. Covered and not covered. Not covered by jnana karma. Unmixed bhakti. Paratvena Nirmalam. What does Nirmalam mean? Pure. Without mala. Without impurity. Nirmalam. Or amalam. Same. And so, favorably, this is now the, I hope you can follow. Those that are new are not going to follow this so well. Those of you who've been around, you know what I'm talking about. This other verse, Rupa Goswami's verse, Anyabhi Lashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Adinavratam, Anukul Yena Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Uttama. So it's, the chart is just showing how the two verses are saying the same thing. The language is different, the message is the same. Word for word. Anukul means favorably. Anukul yena. Prabhupada has given the word for word. Necessary condition. We accept those things that are favorable for devotional service. Anukul yena. Krishna. Anushilana. What does Anushilana mean? What does Shiva mean? Shiva.
Practice.
Huh?
Practice.
Practice, conduct, behavior. Like, you know, you have a course taught here, Bhakti Sadachar. So, achar is behavior. Shiva, simply behavior or conduct. And Anu Shiva is following the conduct of pure devotees. You're following that example set by them. Not imitating. Don't try to imitate Raghunath Das Goswami and eat next to nothing, or Haridas Thakur and chant three lakhs of names every day. We can't do that. We can't imitate. But we can follow. We can take these practices that they're showing. That's Anushilana. Here's the constantly authorized that follow practice or activity with body, minds, and words. Anushilana. Bhakti Uttama, devotional service, topmost. Yeah. Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. So it's the same. Narada and Rupa Goswami teaching the same teaching. No surprise. The language is different. And the whole message of nectar of devotion is about devotion. And that this verse is the essence of the whole nectar of devotion of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. How to practice devotional service. So we the message with this presentation is, if we become followers of Rupa Goswami, as we're supposed to be Rupa Anugas, followers of Rupa Goswami, then we'll cultivate as Rupa Goswami teaches to cultivate, and by his example how he cultivated, and the followers of Rupa Goswami cultivate. Our acharyas are the line of Rupa Anugas, followers of Rupa Goswami. And so we practice that way. And by practicing that way, you can remember from the definition, two things will happen. Senses will become purified, and the identification with the designation, I'm a sannyasi and you're a grahastha. That's a designation. Lord Chaitanya taught that's not who we are. Kiva vipra. Kiva nyasi, shudra kini noi. I'm not a learned person, I'm not a sannyasi, I'm not a shudra, I'm not having any designation. Although we may act in conformity with standards expected of one who is a sannyasi, or one who is a grahastha, or one who is whatever, that's not our identity. We act according to theistic conduct that's suitable for us, but we don't identify. At least, by the power of bhakti, that identification slackens, and the essence becomes predominant instead. So this is the last slide. And we're done. Wasn't that nice? Here's the exercise. Along with identification with our body, we also identify commonly with our mind. And within the mind, there's different feelings or desires. Prabhupada has described that mind has these three functions: thinking, feeling, willing. Thinking, feeling, willing. And then following that is we do. It's similar to the message of Bhagavad Gita by contemplating the objects of the senses. You develop a feeling for that object of the sense, some attachment. And then after some feeling, some desire, I want, or I don't like. And then willing, I have to get one, or I have to get rid of this, or change it or something. And then we do something. Before action, there's the mind. So the mind precedes action, the functions of the mind. So this entering or chanting where there's without upadis is where this false identification or upadi or designation awakens some emotion of some kind, a thing, a thought or a feeling or some desire. And I hope you brought your beads with you, because we're going to do this little experiment or exercise. When you're chanting, you can watch the mind. You know, there's you and there's the mind. Generally, we identify with the mind. We don't do that detachment from the mind program. We just go with it. Mind goes here, we go. Mind goes there, we go. The chariot of mind. Mano Ratena. This is an exercise of detachment from the mind and the designations and the desires within the mind. And just, you don't go there, you just watch it. Like watching a cloud in the sky passing over. Then that thought or feeling, that activity in the mind, what is it rooted in? Rooted in the bodily conception. I'm supposed to say, ask. Ask yourself if you may be willing to give up this upadi and take up the real identity of being das hum, daso hum, I'm the servant of Krishna. Stay with the mood of service to Krishna. And if the answer is no, I want to go for this ride, then you can ask the next question. How long do I want to go for a ride for? When am I going to get off this ride of the chariot of mind? How long will it take for me to give up this false identity? You follow? Should we do it again?
Go back to the beginning.
You establish the philosophy, now here's the application. The philosophy is those upadis is not who we are. We have a body, but it's not who we are. And we have a mind, but that's not who we are either. And as long as we identify with body and mind false through the agency of false ego, then when we're chanting, we'll be going for a ride with the chariot of the mind. So through knowledge, there may be some detachment. Jnana Vairagya. It's a couplet found forever in all the Vedic wisdom. Jnana Vairagya. But beyond jnana, what about vijnana? Practical application of this. So, watch the mind. I mean, the reverse is just focus on the holy name. But we have a problem focusing on the holy name because we're distracted by the thoughts and feelings within the mind. So as soon as I finish this, going through it again, take your beads and we'll do a little exercise, and then we'll do some sharing. If we were pure devotees, we would be free from designations. If bhakti was so strong, even if we have a body, we have a mind, we wouldn't be disturbed by it. but we're not there yet. So it is certified that in the mind appears so many things. So then monitor those so many things that appear, and particularly ones that reappear and reappear and reappear. Those are especially prominent and also important for us to be aware of. Where's it coming from? So a need or a want or a fear or something. Then ask yourself, okay, you want to give this up and take shelter of the spiritual conception and a Christian servant. And if you are, then smooth sailing. And if not, then how long do I want to stay in this chanting with designations, chanting with distracted mind? Okay. Any questions on the exercise? And then we'll do the exercise. For how long do you want to chant? A couple hours? Chant 5-10 minutes. You want to remember or write things down or something? Anybody not have your beads? Everyone has beads. And we'll do some sharing at the end, and then after that, just general questions about anything you want to. We have until when? 6 o'clock? Yes? 6:30. Defining upadhi and chanting without upadis. Maybe you'll pick up on the meaning as we go along. So any volunteers? Someone would like to, within those last 10 minutes of chanting, what was your experience? Did the mind wander? To where did the mind wander? Yes?
Yeah, the mind definitely wandered, and it wandered to different thoughts, different designations, as you said, like yeah. As a parent, I was thinking about my kids, what are the kids doing there? And so I immediately then again I brought back the mind, okay, I need to chant now. So again started chanting. And again some thoughts again came up. So again I had to bring back the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So but I was wondering, why is the mind showing you all these pictures? Why all the events? Why doesn't it? Is it the function of the mind itself? My soul doesn't want to do all that. So why is the mind behaving like this? Why is it reminding me all my designations as a father, as an employee? Why does it? Is it the? It's not the function of the soul.
No.
Definitely no. So it is the Maya.
I'm waiting till you finish your question.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Your question is, why does the mind go even you don't want it to go?
Yes, sir.
That's the question.
Yeah, before even chanting, I decided I should not think anything. I'm only a servant of Krishna.
So, let me ask you a question. When Arjuna asked Krishna that question, what is Krishna's answer? Arjuna's question is, paraphrasing, why is it that one is compelled into activity as if against one's own will? What is it, Krishna? What causes this? That's the activity part. But before the activity part is the thinking, feeling, willing part. So what's the cause of this? Krishna's answer is?
Lust.
Huh?
Lust.
Contact with the mode of passion results in lust, kama, or desire. And unfulfilled desire results in frustration or anger.
So
it's contact with the mode of passion. The soul comes in contact with the mode of passion. What does the mode of passion say? I want to enjoy. What do your children say to you? I want one. No. So that's Krishna's sanctioning our desire. The root is desire for independent enjoyment. And then we're provided a mind, a material mind. Because we have a spiritual mind. But the material mind, the spiritual mind is eclipsed by or covered by the material mind that says, so we have this war going on. The spiritual mind that wants to go to Krishna, the material mind that wants to be the enjoyer of matter. And there are varieties. So many varieties. Too many varieties. So complex. And the mind then becomes attached to this variety, that variety, and so many varieties we spin out. We're habituated to. We're addicted to. Stronger than habituated. Habit is one thing, and addiction is another thing. We're asat Trishna in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's language. Thirst for the impermanent. As opposed to thirst for the permanent. Sat Krishna or Krishna Krishna. So we want to go there. Thirst for Krishna, eagerness for Krishna. But this other, the chanting with shelters other than Krishna, There's no shelter. But it's an attachment, an affinity for being an enjoyer of the temporary. And we have different roles to play, designations, different roles to play, and we're accustomed to that. So religious life is where you do those things according to codes of religious conduct. When I'm in the workplace, I'm ethical. When I'm in the home, I'm dutiful. So it doesn't require that in the workplace you're neglectful. It doesn't require in the home you're neglectful. But chanting without designation, so the question was why? And it's contact with the mode of passion. So we want to move the dial to contact with the mode of goodness, at least. And for that period of time, the mode of goodness, we're focused on chanting. And then that very quickly elevates us to transcendence without the flickering back and forth between temporary, permanent, temporary, permanent, temporary, permanent. By regulation of all of our eating, our work, and our recreation, and all of our activities, what good is regulation? And then within the frame of that, the incubation chamber, mode of goodness incubation chamber, we then focus on the holy name. The more that you can regulate the activities of your life in the workplace and at home, and you know, when you take rest and when you get up and what you eat and when you eat, and mode of goodness, keep things very clean and be truthful and be compassionate and, you know, seek knowledge. Mode of goodness. These aren't transcendental yet. It's just mode of goodness lists. Then chanting, you can chant with faith. You can say on the sat side, focused upon Krishna's side more. And then practicing keeping the mind of Krishna helps keep the mind of Krishna. Practice. Cultivation of sat. That attachment for sat leads for detachment from asa. And specifically also, they don't go to the back row, come to the front row. It's much warm and friendly up here. The inner part is Krishna and our attachment or affinity for Krishna. The other is the chamber in which that grows nicely. Like dry wood burns better than wet wood. So keep the wood dry. Mode of goodness. And then the purpose of the dry wood is to get fire. So that's the holy name. And continue to practice like that, like this little exercise. If we don't pay attention to where the mind goes, it's going to go all over the place. Just like your child. Don't pay attention. Next thing you know, they're in the ocean. Or off in the woods, or who knows what. So, now you're worried. So, some supervision. And mind also. So this is just supervising the mind. power of discretion or discrimination. This is the Krishna side, that's the designation side. And then making free will choices, let me go to the dasosmi side. In the mood of service, let me go to Krishna. Like that. Someone else want to share? Yes?
Thank you so much. Actually, I started chanting nicely with the mood of servant dasosmi.
Good.
My mind wandered for three times.
Only?
Three, four times.
Okay.
First time, actually, when I was chanting, my mind recognized that somebody is chanting besides me. So my mind wanted to see who is chanting besides me.
Mm.
So I opened my eyes and I see Bhakti Rasa Mataji chanting here. Then my mind got satisfied. And then I could be able to chant again nicely. And then after some time, I did not hear her chanting. So again, my mind wandered and wanted to see what happened to her. So I again opened my eyes and see, and she sat over there and she was chanting. Then again, I got satisfied, my mind got satisfied, and I started again chanting. And then later, one time, then again questions arise in my mind, what Maharaj is going to do after we chant. Whether he is going to ask us our experiences, or whether he wants us to discuss with each other what are our experiences.
Oh, that would have been nice. That would have been very nice. Oh, that would be much better.
Next time.
Very nice.
So what kind of upadhi is this man?
My mind is, because I'm going to be conducting the same thing sometime in the festival of the holy name, this very same little exercise. So I like very much. The frame could be at the very beginning, you know, for the 10 minutes, sit in groups of whatever, 4 or 5, and then share afterwards. Right, thank you. Is that the fourth time your mind went somewhere?
No, yes, yes, so much. But I don't want to share.
All right. So what did you learn from that exercise?
I learned that I should focus more on the chanting than other things. I mean, many things will be there for my distraction, but I should focus on my chanting. You know?
Yeah.
But I'm not understanding what designations in this kind of distractions. What kind of designations?
What kind of
upadis? What kind of upadis is this?
Well. Sounds like, you know, just social. I'll do a little sharing, not from the last 10 minutes of chanting, but a god brother, just devotee named Purnachandra. Many of you don't know him because he's American, but from U.S. he went to London, from London he went to Russia, then Russia he left his body, Purnachandra. And he was second initiated by Tamal Krishnamurti. Very, very nice devotee, very fixed. We shared a room together in the Brooklyn Temple once upon a time. And he was really strict when it came to chanting. There was like a rule. You can fuss budget with the, you know, the climate control, you know, the fan is on or the heat is on or whatever it is. And then that's it. And then don't stop to do something else. Even if you want to get a cup of water or tissue or something like that, just until you finish around. He was brahminical, so he wasn't like, you know, a heavy ordering type of person, but he was very regulated type of person and very disciplined, especially with chanting. And as a result, his mind was always very clear. Whenever he spoke, it was very clear. I mean, it impacted how he lived his life and how he spoke and how he his whole personality. Just on, you know, the not going for distractions from chanting. Because there's a tendency. It's just like maybe some of you noticed observing Mona Vrata. Maybe some of you didn't. But you should have. And if you did, you would have noticed. There's a tendency that tongue has to blah, blah, blah. Just, you know, social. Blah, blah, blah. It's not like, you know, necessarily frivolous, but it's just, you know, it has to have some engagement. I mean, how, you know what I mean? You know, when you're sitting taking prasadam and you don't say anything. You say something because you're with some people and you say something. But it's just like an urge. Same as these other examples, the social. So, then what do you do? It's not like that bad. You know, the wonder who's next to you chanting Java. It's that, you know, degrading behavior or something like that of the mind. It's just distraction. And then another distraction, and you know, you allow distraction, and that's what's prevalent, is distraction. So what's it like without distraction? That's concentration. And how do you get concentration? You practice it. So when chanting, find a place that's, you know, and then you're just chanting. And the effect of that is when you're doing other things, you're totally focused on each of the things that you do. When you're reading, when you're with your children, when you're doing whatever you're doing, totally focused. And if you don't do that when you're chanting, you're not going to be totally focused when you're doing anything. Bahushata yanantascha. In the language of Bhagavad Gita, Bhutayogyavasayana. So it starts with chanting. That's our discipline. It's a nice exercise. You know, a thought is coming to mind. At least one round for the next week. Do this. And you don't have to like make a list, but you know, take note of there's you, the chanter, and the sound coming from you, the chanter, and then there's the mind. And you know, your business is just chanting. And practice like that, and it becomes easier if you practice. I mean, initially there's a struggle because you're not used to discipline. Used to anything goes, like children, anything goes. But when there's a loving discipline within the family, when the adult says to the child, such and such, there's more of a chance they're going to listen than if there's no adult present. It's just party time the whole time. Anything goes. So if there's discipline involved in chanting, and then, you know, it's not just don't do such and such, it's give the positive. Like the Bhagavad Gita verse, the first instruction Krishna gives is you tolerate duality. Matra sparshasta kamteya titoshna sukha dukhada agamapayam nishyasa tansadiksha savarta. So you withdraw consciousness from the duality. But then you have to place it somewhere. Give it some positive engagement. Go to sat instead of asat. The same with chanting. Withdraw from the upadi and go to the dasosmi. Just be in the mood of serving the holy name. Let it go. Bring it back. Plug in, or connect with, invest consciousness in the holy name, just being in the mood of being in the relationship and service with the holy name. And then the mind goes again. Just keep. Want to share?
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
So much of our time is engaged in the so-called role play or in the designations, like as a mother or a employee or a father, so many things, right? So what should be the consciousness in such, while performing such roles, such a way that it's easy to remember that we are serving by chanting? What I'm trying to say,
I think I know what you're trying to say. We live in the world, is what you're trying to say. We're practicing, we're cultivating Krishna consciousness, yes, but Maharaj, we're in the world. And we have so many things that we have to do. How do we carry that consciousness with us into the world? That's your question. Well, my answer is, everything depends upon the quality of your chanting. That's my answer. So if the quality of your chanting is very strong, then the consciousness that I'm doing this for Krishna, I'm doing that for Krishna, I'm doing the other thing for Krishna. Consciousness. The designation is not what I identify myself as. It's a service to Krishna. And that's a service to Krishna. And that's a service to Krishna. My thought is going right now, I mean, I understand what your question is, but my thought is going to a recent exchange with somebody that's has some childhood trauma, and they're struggling with it, even in their adult life. And they're finding ways that are helping bring that, you know, trauma is, it's fear. It's just gripping. It just takes over. Like somebody, Prabhupada's example, someone that dies in a fire. In their next life, they see a little lamp. And their whole body becomes filled with, seized with fear. Just seeing a little flame. Because of that trauma that's stored within their mind and then transmitted onto the body. So they're undergoing some treatment, trauma therapy. So they were describing this and that, and the other thing helps bring that down. So my question to them was, like your question, or the reverse of it, where's Krishna in the picture? Because ultimately the purpose of that is what? Is to help you get closer to Krishna. The obstacle between you and Krishna is being, you know, the mountain is becoming a bump. Great. Now, where's Krishna in the picture? The same. You know, the reverse. The duties, the designations that we have, I mean, children are going to be children. Moms are going to be moms. It's, you know, built into the system. Animals, they know. Humans, they know. They don't have to go to mom school. They know how to do. Just naturally. So, we're awarded bodies and minds to suit our nature. Swabhava is there. Now, what within that swabhava, we're to grow Krishna consciousness. That everything depends upon the holy name in it, the quality of your chanting of the holy name. Seeing Krishna in that. Just like that quote, maybe you remember the picture of Ramananda Roy sitting with Mahaprabhu, and Ram Ramananda Roy is saying, on the Mahabhagavata stage, one still sees objects and forms. But they don't just see the objects and forms, they see Krishna. They see the form of Krishna. They see Krishna there. So, that's the Mahabhagavata stage. Now what about the sadhana stage? Well, it depends on how you've chanted the holy name. And, of course, the other activities. Your study of the scripture, and that can also help purify the intelligence, and then the intelligence goes here instead of there, with Krishna instead of without Krishna. So our hearing and chanting activities is going to determine seeing Krishna within our upadhi, within our duties of life. This is the teaching. I mean, this is an exercise to help us go beyond being religionists, but being transcendentalists. Being with Krishna. And it starts with when you're just with Krishna. Don't you in the holy name. It's really sacred. It's the time of the day when it's just you're with Krishna. And Krishna is with you. He's so kind. And then that carries over, that consciousness carries over to all the other things. At least the opportunity is there. It takes some practice.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah.
As you said that we look for Krishna, we do our service, as a service to Krishna, whatever we do. What if we do not see that? Maybe in some aspects we do see that, but in other aspects we don't see that.
Well, be patient. And you continue to cultivate. That's bhakti. There's faith in the process that in time, even those which I don't see, or have, you know, I don't feel a sense of connection with Krishna in these areas, bhakti is powerful. Bhakti will bring one to that position. So, I'm giving you the first of a two-part answer. The first is, with faith, you just continue. Not blind. You know, examine what the teachings say, the examples of teachers show, and use your discriminating faculty to get to the position of firm faith, and then you move with that. Then there's another. I don't know of any scriptural reference, it's just my experience, that says there's some areas that give you strength, spiritual strength. Do them very nicely. Just absorb yourself in whatever it is. Some people like chanting, some people like cooking, some people like reading, some people like kirtan, some people like deity worship, some people like a number of those things. Do those things. And feel connected to Krishna from those things. Then you borrow some strength from over there to some of those other places. Consciously. Yeah, at the same time. Those are two-part answers to your question. Follow? Yes.
When I was chanting, at least 20 times my mind is wandered.
Okay.
And now that I'm thinking about so many times it wandered, I'm only remembering about 7 or 8 instances where I'm still able to remember where it wandered. So my when my first time I saw the light, as soon as I saw this light, I remembered the example that you gave to the boy in that class just a few minutes back. Mm-hmm. And then second thing is my son was sleeping, so I was wondering what if he starts crying as soon as he wakes up and doesn't see his mom and starts crying. So, but luckily he's not crying, so that was unnecessarily, because he will disturb everybody. And then I was thinking, I have taken a move of 364, Now I still have so many more rounds to go. Will I be able to do it? So I'm either thinking of past or I'm either thinking of the future. I'm not thinking of this moment to do. So I focus only and whosoever is coming, I'm looking at them. Suddenly my mind is thinking about some things. Then some people are chanting, then I'm thinking, they are progressing well, I need to do. So I'm all the time I'm not able to, my eyes are taking information and all the time processing instead of focusing on the chanting. Focusing on what I'm doing right now.
Okay, let me say about five things. I'll say them succinctly. In the month of September, and in the month of April, commonly, I'm asked to do college programs. So in this past month of April, in four colleges in a row, I was asked the same subject, stress management. It told me something. Students are stressed. And in the course of that stress management, one of the themes that's standard, just taken from people that professionally teach stress management, I said, I'll teach stress management, a spiritual approach. Sure. So, even in not spiritual approach, one of the things is the cause of stress is worrying about the future, lamenting over the past and not being present. You want stress? Keep doing like that. If you don't want stress, learn how to be present. Second thing is, impersonalism stresses being present. That means block out everything else. And in fact, the first person that I heard chanting of Hare Krishna from, before I heard Prabhupada, was an impersonalist who traveled around. He wrote a book called Be Here Now. It was a famous book at the time. Be in the moment. Third point, Buddhism teaches the same thing. It's voidism. No, but you know, for them, even you have to be here in the moment in order to realize there's no moments. But you know, the objective is to diminish distraction or diminish misery, because Buddhism teaches the root of misery is desire. You know, that's what this definition is, desiring something other than the shelter of Krishna, the service of Krishna. Desiring happiness apart from Krishna. So, like, you know, the question was asked before, why? Contact with the motive passion, we desire to enjoy. So, that's the root, independent enjoyment. And now how do I give up independent enjoyment when I have a mode of independent enjoyment? So part of it is detachment, knowledge and detachment, but then you're in the moment. So for us, now the conclusion is, for us to be in the moment is with Krishna, be in our relationship with Krishna. For us, access, the most immediate and direct and recommended access to be in our relationship with Krishna is the holy name. So that's what you go back to. So the tendency for distraction is abundant. Now what's the medicine? Who we really are. Attachment to Krishna. Attachment to the position of being in Krishna's service. Like that little presentation this morning about completeness. Our sense of completeness is to be with the Supreme Complete. Otherwise we're incomplete. The spark that's apart from the fire becomes carbon, charcoal. To bring it back into fire, it glows again. So that's the sign. So it's not just berate yourself or admonish yourself for the distraction. Notice the distraction. Then what? Bring it back. And that's our practice, that's yoga. We can just go on being chant distractedly. According to Chaitanya Charitamrita, one can do that for Pahud. What's the verse? Anyway, one can chant the holy name for many lifetimes. Many lifetimes. Many lifetimes. And not get the goal. What to speak of, you know, stress management and so forth. We never come to the spiritual position. You know, this exercise is important. You know, bring the mind back. Just as Krishna said, from whatever and wherever the mind wanders, into its flickering and unsteady nature. That's the upadhi thing. Bring the mind back under the control of the self. And, you know, even when you have a small child, like she's referring to, she's got a couple of them. You got one handful, she's got two handfuls. And they need mom and dad. They're dependents. You've invited them into the family, so they're it's a service, it's a duty. Somehow arrange things in such a way that chanting can be done with focus, somehow. However, when you've got a small child that has its challenges, but somehow. And the tendency will be for the mind to go to that object that's not present, like you're saying, the occupation duty, or so many, too many. And that will give spiritual strength to all the other duties, you know, the designations, the upadhis. Not, they'll spiritualize them. Krishna will be at the center. The potential of Krishna being at the center for all aspects of life becomes possible. To this one thing. We're placing a lot of faith in the holy name. This one thing. Just this one thing. But that one thing is everything. Krishna is not different than his holy name. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives this definition of faith. You're familiar with it? Look it up later. 241 Bhagavad Gita Purport. Chapter 2, text 41. Shraddha Shabde Vishvas Kahi Sudhrida Nishchaya Krishne Bhakti. Faith means having confidence, vishvas kahe, sudhrita nishtaya, by achieving one thing or other things. Just one thing. I don't have to think of so many things. I don't have to think of all these so many things. I have to think of one thing. And by one thing, all other things will be accomplished. All other things. All other desirable things. What's that one thing? Krishna bhakti. And Krishna bhakti begins from chanting. And the quality of Krishna bhakti will be strengthened by the quality of one's chanting. What's that quality of chanting? Just absorbed. Attached to sat. And asat will fall in its place. Better, far better than the mentality of doership. I'm the father, I'm the provider, I'm this, I'm that, designation. You do those things, but in Krishna consciousness. And minus Krishna consciousness, its quality is much inferior. What to speak of repeated birth and death and all other so many unwanted things. Okay. Any other sharing from that exercise, or I think at this point we can ask anything under the sun that you'd like. We have 15.
I have a small silly question. Can I ask you?
Sure. Small silly question. Sure.
So talking about all these roles they are playing and stress and everything, can you give us, each of us, a remote control so that we can control our mind and control our mind and focus and concentrate and do our prayer and...
No.
No.
it's something, each of us has a relationship with Krishna, mm-hmm. and it's not that somebody can fix our relationship with Krishna for us. We have to fix our relationship with Krishna ourselves.
There's no remote control.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We're used to mechanized things. But this is a personalized, not a mechanized thing. It stems from our relationship with Krishna, and we can repair or strengthen or remove the obstructions from our relationship with Krishna. There's, you know, Krishna will do. Krishna will take care of all of that. But it's between each one of us and Krishna. Do we want Krishna?
I understand that we have to work very hard to get there.
But to work very hard specifically is in terms of our relationship with Krishna.
Yeah.
There's things that we do that we may work hard at, but it's in our relationship with Krishna. Don't forget, I mean, like this person with this trauma. I mean, he shared with me what the trauma was, and it was shocking, and no wonder he has a struggle. And so he's doing something. But don't forget Krishna. Where's Krishna in the picture? Because when we struggle, tendency is we forget Krishna because we're busy with the struggle. And life is filled with struggles. If not one, there's many. Then one fades out and another five come in. So, struggle is Dadihiyeshu Gunamayi Mamamaya Dorathyaya. You know the verse, Bhagavad Gita? The material energy causes constant struggle. But one who surrenders to Krishna can easily cross beyond the struggle. Krishna carries you to the other side. So, as you said, we have to work hard. But the surrender to Krishna is the most important aspect of that working hard. It's our relationship with Krishna. And there are some things that are pleasing to Krishna, we do those. Some things that are not pleasing to Krishna, we don't do those. The ones that we do for Krishna, we do with maximum attention in devotion, like chanting. Most important one, actually. We have time for, I think, one more question.
Today when I was doing my 64 rounds, and also whenever I'm chanting, there are always occasions where I kind of recollect some things from the past that which people have said to me, and I've been hurt from that, and I'm not able to let it go, and then that kind of spoils my chanting. So today also it happened, like 5 or 6 rounds, I was like kind of my mind was distracting between chanting and that thought, and then somehow after some time I prayed to Krishna, Krishna please help me to focus, and then slowly again my focus came back to 100% on chanting. But that happens to me, that I'm not able to let go of some things, and that spoils my chanting. So how can I
it's like this devotee with the small child was saying, not being present. The past is the past, and the future is the future. A or B, can you change the past or not change the past? can't change the past. Future. If you were Krishna conscious going into the future, would how you're going to handle the future be better? Or if you weren't Krishna conscious, would you handle the future better? So be Krishna conscious. And being Krishna conscious is in the moment. So actually another one of the lessons, Borijan wrote a book, Chant. That was the title of the book. Not like even on chanting, just chant. And he uses the same methodology. The first, he has nine principles, but the first principle is one mantra at a time. And specifically, don't worry about the one that you didn't chant nicely. And don't anticipate the mantra that you're going to chant nicely. Because you can't chant that one right now. You can chant this one right now. So chant this one right now. And then when you chanted this one, fantastic or poor or somewhere in between, it's gone, and now you chant one mantra at a time, one mantra at a time. It's the be here now principle. It's the be present with the holy name. Be present with Krishna. Be in your relationship with Krishna. So to get rid of the thing, you know, this tendency to dwell on asat, replace it with sat. And that's, light is more powerful than darkness. If you just struggle and struggle, it's the same message from Bhagavad Gita. It's a material energy. You can struggle and struggle. Or take shelter of Krishna. Light is stronger than darkness. That's the way to get rid of the darkness. Go to the light. Jyotir Gama. Be present with the holy name. There's strength. Well, yeah, but I know my nature. My nature is I don't let go of that bad thought. That's the darkness. No. I remind you, light is stronger than darkness. And so, the yeah, but becomes, well, I'm going to do it anyways. That's faith. You practice abhyasa yoga yoktena. And then light prevails. Sat prevails over asat. And this is the sadhana stage. And then do the sadhana stage nicely, and then the higher stages will follow. That's also part of our faith and part of our process. One be spontaneously attracted, whatever that thing was in the past, spontaneously attracted. And in the sadhana stage, one has to bring the mind. In the spontaneous stage, the mind just goes. The example given by Kapila Dev to Devahuti is like the water in the Ganges in the rainy season. You don't have to tell the water, now you can flow downstream, please. It's rushing downstream. So same, in that purified state, when there's the sound of Krishna's name, or the topics of Krishna Vita, the mind just goes. Now it's practice. In the spontaneous, the mind just goes. So we have to pay the price for our past material contact. Our forgetfulness of Krishna program. The free will choices where we said no to Krishna again and again. Now we have to practice saying yes to Krishna instead of no to Krishna. We're paying the price for all of that. So that's the struggle. But the struggle is crossed beyond by taking shelter of Krishna. Just in practice, with faith. We have 3.5 minutes. Someone else had a question.
So, Maharaj, as in a daily schedule, which one to prioritize besides so many worldly designations like chanting, deity worship, reading, listening? Which one to prioritize? because if you do one, you'll be lacking in the other. So.
When you make, do you make a schedule for yourself? Or you just kind of go with the flow?
No, I make a schedule.
You make a schedule. Do you follow the schedule that you make?
Most of the time I try to, but you know, the rounds I do, I have to finish the rounds. That's my intention.
Okay, you've answered that question. That's priority. Yes?
Yes.
You don't skip that.
I won't skip that.
Good.
But, the mind, like, I won't see Krishna in the by chanting, but I won't see. At least by reading or listening, I see Krishna. Okay, I can imagine that, okay, Krishna is the controller, he's doing everything. But the chanting, it's just, okay, I need to finish the round.
Because there's a commitment to chanting, and there's a reason for the commitment to chanting, but because of the commitment to chanting, the chanting happens. Without commitment, things don't happen. Not that any material things don't happen. Spiritual things, same. So take commitment. Now, your question specifically is prioritizing. So, in a minute and a half left, before we go over next door for the kirtan, different persons have different ways of organizing their time. One way might be each week. You know, within each week, there are 7 days. And every day, there is chanting. Now, within that week, I know I want to do some deity worship, I want to do some hearing, I want to do some reading. So, there's some things that are every day. You know, bathing is every day, cooking is every day, chanting is every day. Certain things are every day. So that's like, okay, that's, you're just filling up that space or that week. And then there's some other days that you're going to do some other things. You may be able to do a little bit of each of those. Some people can do a little bit of each of those things. Bhaktivinoda Thakur did like that. You know, for a certain number of minutes every day, he would do certain things. Read his biography. He was like amazing. He had a little pocket watch. And, you know, to the minute he would... is very, very organized. So, maybe that suits you. Maybe you need, you know, some other structure. Where certain days and whatever it is that makes up your life. Weekends, maybe I have a little more time, so I'll put some extra time in for this and that on weekends. Maybe, you know, take some guidance. But structure in such a way that there's just Bhaktivinoda Thakur arranged things where there's a buffer. Like sometimes, you know, some irregularity would come, then that would close that buffer time. But if it was still open, then he would memorize verses or put something up, you know. Like they make bridges, expansion bridges, when it's summer. And then there's winter. So different seasons, so different times, some things come up. And you know, some of the things that you have scheduled you won't be able to do. So that's, anyway, time management. Your question is how to prioritize. I'm saying do them all, but do them in such a way that it works in a practical sense for you. A little bit every day, each thing. Or something every day, chanting and some other things, a little flexible. Some, you know. Especially if you can write a schedule and keep a schedule, you're halfway there, or more than halfway there. And then, you know, experiment a bit with someone that's guiding you and how to make sure you get those things, because you need to nourish your Krishna consciousness in a variety of ways. Okay, we're going to go to kirtan. That's what we're doing next. Okay.